got the crappy Texans favored by a field goal on the road in Detroit.
Well, they beat the Patriots, should have beat the Browns. They beat the Jaguars. They're trending up right now, and I'm going to go with them.
Ooh, you're laying the 3 points.
I don't like the three, but what can I do?
And we've got the Dallas Cowboys as a field goal favorite at home over the Washington football team. Potential playoff implications.
Dallas, because they will win the division going forward.
My Washington team stands no chance, is what you're saying?
It's going to be a last possession game.
Okay. Leadoff is not responsible for any money lost on a Ziggy lock.
Well, thank God the federal government is starting to move forward with single game betting legislation.
Did it pass?
I think they just
Do we know? No,
I think they've tabled the bill and then it's got to go through.
Oh, I thought yesterday it was going to go through or not. I was like kind of waiting around to see what they said. I mean, why not?
We're getting
have
there.
Single game betting.
Well, yeah, because then you can just pick one Ziggy lock, one that you're really comfortable with.
I know. I got to pick two. You make me pick two last night. You make me pick three on Sunday. Sometimes I just want to pick one. Maybe I want to pick two.
Just pick one game. You can put $5 down and walk away with $3.50 in your pocket. You know, I know.
Well, it's going to happen someday. The government's going to get in on the action.
It's on its way now.
Why not? Like what's the difference? Like, does it make that much? I understand the reasonings like for it, like why you would want multiple games. I know
you don't want. This is how they used to view it, and if you can put the appropriate safeguards in, then I mean I'm all for it. You're all for it. We're not here to debate this thing. It's time, but obviously they just need to make sure that nobody's on the take. Right? Because that's the problem. If you open it up to single game sports betting and you get in an official's or a player's ear and one or two or three people have the ability to affect the outcome of a game, it can skew everything and screw everything up. And we got a scandal on our hands. So imagine you do your best to put the appropriate protections in place for that not to happen and onward and upward.
Yeah. I just, there's so much betting on single game out there. That I don't see the fact that we don't have that as a legal option in the country. It's going to deter any of that. Like if that was going to happen, it was going to happen. So let's do it. It's time. It's going to pass.
It's a revenue generator.
Absolutely. Come on, let's go.
Like I've got no problem. I've got no problem with so-called consumption taxes or sin taxes. Right. If I smoke cigarettes, I should be paying taxes on that. I like to go get the odd bottle of whiskey or a 6-pack or 12-pack of beer, pay a little tax on that. If I want to throw some coin down on a game, pay a little tax. It all goes into the kitty, man.
Yeah.
And then pay it back out for a fair and more equitable society. We're all down.
Let's do it.
Boom. Just don't.
We could be politicians. There you go.
Yeah, exactly.
See?
Exactly.
We just solved something in 3 minutes.
Could you imagine us campaigning? Could you imagine that? Could you imagine going door to door, knocking? Hey, what's your biggest concern in this riding? What you're my constituent. What can I help you with?
I think I don't think it's that bad of an idea. I really don't.
I would.
Who would run? Who would be the? I think you would be the. You would be like.
No, I would.
You would be the MP, or you would be the counselor. I would be the side, the right hand man, guy that takes care of all the stuff. You would have to do all the, appearances, and you'd have to go in front of whoever they go in front of.
You have to go in front of all of the people. Yeah. All of the people that they go in front of.
Yeah, you'd have to do all that, and I would do all the running around, figuring out what to do, exactly, what bills to pass.
See, I would... Honestly,
we should do it. We should run.
I would work that in reverse. I would be the behind-the-scenes puppet master, and I would stand at the end of everybody's driveway as you go door-to-door, and I want to be there when you knock on Doris's door and ask her... for her support in your push to become the next school board trustee or the city councilor or the MPP or MP for your riding.
We might pass on Doris DeSales, bud. It's okay. It's only one vote.
The new MP for the riding of Scarborough Ziggywood.
Yeah. Well, we might have to figure. We don't have to do it here. We can go to another district, all right? We'll go down to whatever area you're in, whatever. You probably don't want to say that on air.
No, I don't care. I'm down in
I don't even know. What riding are you? What are you in?
I'm Toronto Danforth.
Okay.
Yeah.
We could go down there.
East of the DVP.
The Danforth. And I could grab the Greek community would be more than half happy. Yeah. You're from there. I mean,
exactly.
It's perfect.
Exactly. That's the plan. We'll run in there Toronto Danforth.
We'll go
and
Danforth.
Zygomanis will bring all the Greek.
There you go. I'll rally
support
everybody
to our side.
Yep. The I whole like Hellenic community.
We'll do like a big 3-day campaign in the middle of August,
yes.
A taste of the Danforth, and I'll just be the blob on the side, stuffing my face with food. Vote for that guy.
You with your baklava.
Just like a blimp in a chair after 3 days of devouring souvlaki and all the Greek goods. See, I've heard that one. I'm scared to pronounce that word. Say that again.
Spanikopita.
Spanikopita.
You know what? It's not good. Like there's Greek people right now listening that are absolutely crying laughing because that's not the way you say it either.
You just handed in your Greek card. Was that the...
I've been to Greece a number of times and my parents are born there, but I don't speak much of it. When I go there, I pick it up. I magically just, I don't know, maybe it's from my parents, you know, they spoke that and they spoke Macedonian in the house but they wanted us to learn English and French. So we never really got a chance to learn it because my parents were just, all right, you're born in Canada, you're Canadian. And that was, you know, don't forget about where you came from or anything. And, you know, we always, you know, family's really important, but we were Canadian. So it was English and French.
So how's your French?
That's kind of slipping
there
away.
There you go.
Yeah,
all
that's
right.
Kind of slipping away too. That's it's not bad though.
So I got to say, you've let me down so far on this program because usually the morning after a Ziggy Lock, if you don't win, you're out with your excuses. So you did pick Houston. You laid the 3 points and the
you
Texans waxed the Lions. They waxed.
You weren't happy with with that pick.
How often? Okay, so let's go back. Let's do a little deeper dive on this. How often, when two bad teams play, do you take the road team when it's favored?
I don't look at that. I look at how a team is playing, where they're trending. You got to look at injuries, and now you got to factor in COVID, and we'll get to the Baltimore Ravens later. But, I mean, that's another big factor. I like to see how the quarterback is playing. That's maybe the one position where I'll kind of dial in and look to see the previous week is kind of what I like to look at and what they did. But this is just – Look at who Houston has lost to this year. Maybe they have one loss against a non-playoff team,
They had an impossible schedule the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season.
They had
the Steelers and the Patriots.
Yeah.
And
so you have to look at who they lost to. So that's a big one for me. And then it's feel. There's got to be a little bit of feel to the game and how a team does. Is it a good road team? How did the defense and offenses match up against each other? What is the history with the coaches? I think this all has to factor into something. I mean, I wouldn't exactly call me an NFL expert insider. You know, the Ziggy Locks just kind of formed out of nowhere.
They just, well, I mean, it was your invention. Wait with bated breath and hang on every word. So you got Houston right, and then Dallas. So what are you crying about with the Dallas Cowboys? And we've got to discuss the mess that are the Dallas Cowboys right now.
They lost both starting tackles.
Okay, so Cam Irving, and then their all-pro Zach Martin went down. Yeah.
Is that a big deal to you, or are you just going to shrug that one off?
No, it's a big deal. I'm not going to deny that it's a big deal. But the Washington football team can still go in and beat this version of the Dallas Cowboys with or without Zach Martin and Cam Irving.
I understand that, but I feel like that's kind of a big deal when you lose both starting tackles. So
you got the running back, Ezekiel Elliott, fumbling again.
Oh, my goodness. He's leading the league in fumbles.
And fumbles lost. I think he's recovered only one of the seven fumbles he's had so far this year. You can't have that.
He's leading the league. What is happening? Did he not sign a big deal?
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Do you sign a big contract to your running back?
Well, you used to, and very few teams do. Derrick Henry got taken care of in Tennessee. If you've got a guy who is a major part of your offense, then you do.
How many guys are consistent year to year?
Well, that was the fight in Pittsburgh with Le'Veon Bell. Like, they were throwing the ball to him so much out in the flats that he said, look, I'm a hybrid. You got to pay me as a running back. You got to pay me as a running back and as a receiver.
You love
just
that.
Give me all the money.
You're just like,
I just,
get out
I'm
of town.
Like, oh my God, are you kidding?
Yeah.
You want to get paid like a receiver, line up out wide and show me what you got on a deep route.
Do you think maybe like that hybrid is going to start to become, you know, we might see more of that. If they stop paying running backs, you might see more of that, you know, a player that can do both
of
them.
Well, the entire game now is predicated on passing, and a lot of the run plays, at least you didn't really see it yesterday, but at least with some of the more forward thinking coaching staffs, a lot of the run plays are gadget plays. You'll see reverses and sweeps and stuff like that, where wide receivers will come off the line, and like a double reverse or even a jet sweep type thing, they behave as the running back on that play. You know, so a lot of teams utilize the run as a bit of a gadget, and they use it also to try to set up the play action, right? The fake handoff and then the passing play. But no, the traditional Earl Campbell era, run the ball on first down for 3 or 4 yards, run the ball on second down for 3 or 4 yards, and then have third down and two and either run it again or complete a short pass for a first down. Those days are long, long gone.
Yeah. So the running backs, you can't pay them anymore. I'm sorry. I mean, Derrick Henry's an absolutely phenomenal player, but man, it's watching Zeke this year. It's been tough. It really is hard. This Cowboys team, it's right there. It's right there for them. I don't care who's injured or who's out at this point. They have a chance, but during a game when you do have those injuries, I think the injuries are tough in game. But it was almost like, and I know Alex Smith, the quarterback for Washington, was great yesterday, but it was almost on his interception that he threw, it was almost like the Cowboys didn't know who was playing where, and there was so much confusion that he threw the interception because he didn't know what the coverage was going to be. It's almost like when in a hockey game, or, you know, if a team is so bad sometimes and they don't have any systems, sometimes it's hard to play against because you don't have any idea of what they're doing. And it looked like that on the interception. Alex Smith was probably like, I don't know.
You're saying,
I've never seen this formation.
Did you just open up a can of worms there on the notion of playing a bad team? You know how sometimes you play down to your competition? Well, it isn't necessarily a low energy level, although that may play a part. It may also be you become confused by what the hell it is you're seeing on the other side of the ice.
Absolutely. Some teams that don't have any systems, it's like, I don't know what they're going to do. I have no idea. I think that's what happened on the interception yesterday. Alex Smith was just like, we don't know, like the offensive line, we don't know who's coming at us. Did you not see the Cowboys line up for that? They weren't ready for the snap. They weren't ready.
Yeah, so it's almost like gestures and all that, like get in position.
It was like a complete confusion out there. And then it was almost, and Alex Smith didn't know what to do. And he threw the interception.
That
interception, did you see who came? McLaurin? I'm saying the name the right. He came back on that play and actually tackled him. It was a Metcalf play.
And they ended up holding them to three points.
Dallas didn't turn it into a touchdown.
Didn't turn it into a touchdown.
Absolutely huge part of the game. So McLaurin came back. He's a wide receiver.
Yeah. Turned on the Jets and
came back and play. I love that. You know me. Oh, I love the when it's not your job and you come back.
There were people who predicted the Dallas Cowboys would represent the NFC in the Super Bowl and maybe even win it. And I don't know where you go from here. There was kind of a mutiny. And we're going back to like late September, week three, where a couple of anonymous players went to the media and said, our coaches are clueless. Our practices are dysfunctional. We don't have any schemes. We don't know what's going on here. Then they lose Dak Prescott, which provides a bit of a cover because they are a quarterback-reliant football team. Their defense isn't very good. They've got a couple of good wideouts, right? Amari Cooper at the top of the list. They got some targets down the field. Ezekiel Elliott, when he's not fumbling, is typically one of the better running backs in the league. This is an offensive team, and they just haven't been able to put it together at all. And you go back, Ziggy, to the hiring of Mike McCarthy. So they blow out Jason Garrett after about a decade. Mike McCarthy makes his way down to Dallas, ends up like hanging out with Jerry Jones for an evening, and they might have even had like a sleepover. Like Mike McCarthy just shacked up in the guest bedroom of Mansion Jerry. And the next day he's offered the job. He's offered the job after kind of an inauspicious ending in Green Bay, where it was clear that the McCarthy-Rogers relationship had come to an end. And a lot of people were saying, look, Mike McCarthy's too antiquated for this day and age. He's not creative enough. Is Jerry Jones, the general, not just the owner, the general manager of the Dallas Cowboys, going to admit a mistake and overhaul his coaching staff again? Because this team is barreling toward double-digit losses. I would argue that after yesterday's defeat, even though it is still very, very mathematically possible, I would argue that after yesterday's defeat, they are not going to win the NFC East. They are not going to win the NFC East and may not even finish second in a division that includes the New York Giants and the Washington football team. Is he going to have the courage to admit his mistake and blow it up again? And on that point, if he does, does the marquee of the star on the helmet and the star at midfield, the one that Terrell Owens once danced on, is that marquee, that name brand, enough to lure a coach of consequence who's going to have to put up with the constant meddling and stupidity of the owner?
For me, yeah. I mean, this coaching staff, I think they have to move on from him. It's not working out. The team is terrible. Players in the room are not satisfied with what's going on. They've been, you know, they've come out anonymously in the media about what the coaching staff does, how, you know, unprepared they are. That's a big issue. They can't even, I mean, yeah, after yesterday's game, I don't know what to say about them anymore. If they do win, it'll be a complete surprise for a lot of people. But just some of the play calls, I'm scratching my head yesterday. The fake punt in the fourth.
Well, what about the going for it on fourth and inches at their own 30 and running a passing play?
Yeah, the passing plays on inches, you have Zeke. Use him. I know he's fumbling a lot.
Dude, when it's fourth and inches, give it to your quarterback and push the pile forward. Use your momentum. Just you quarterback sneak it.
Sneak it as well, but you have Zeke. Use him. Okay? But the fake punt when you're, were they down by four at that point? And you run a double reverse? I'm sorry, but Washington's defense looked pretty darn good yesterday. They look pretty good. I don't know what they're thinking with some of these play calling.
It's almost you try to gidget and gadget it up. And
you do that. You can do that when the game is going well. You have to recognize those plays. I'm fine trying them, but you have to pick the right time of the game. When that fake punt doesn't go well, and they do get a touchdown on the turnover on downs, that's the game. Like, it's over. You have to recognize that. It's not like it's on your own 40 and you try to run some play. It's like, okay, we need a big stop here from our defense, or you give up three. Fine, you're still in it. Where did they give the ball up? On the 20? 24? So,
yeah, it's game of field position.
Absolutely. You know, and I don't know, and this is from the guy
I'll tell you this about McCarthy, though, and I'm not coming to his defense. You got to punt on fourth, even fourth and short from your own 30-yard line because you can't give the ball up there.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just say, for the sake of argument, it's a good punt, and it's fair caught, and Washington's starting at their own 20-yard line. You know what that is? That's Mike McCarthy saying, I don't trust my defense to keep Washington off the scoreboard on that next drive.
Their defense was terrible yesterday.
It's been terrible all year, Mike. Like, it's been all year. It's been obscenely bad.
That game yesterday, I had zero confidence. When was the first time they stopped? When they stopped them, I feel like Washington got points on every drive until the third. I mean, I was like, Dalton's going to have to come out and score 50 points for them to win this game.
Yep. And you know, McCarthy quite rightly gets criticized when they're stuffed on fourth and inches and give the ball up at their own 30-yard line, fresh set of downs. You're already in field goal, long field goal, but you're in field goal territory if you're Washington. He gets rightly criticized. I'm not here defending the call, but I'm telling you, coaches end up making silly and weird and stupid and edgy decisions like that when they have no faith in another facet of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I saw that happen, my first thought was, this guy, quite rightly, has no faith in his defense. He doesn't want his defense on the field.
Just do something else. Like I get it.
The play call is a separate thing. But the premise is that he doesn't trust his defense.
Yeah, the good coaches, whether you have injuries or not, or your starting quarterback is out, they find a way. Like, look at the Patriots. They're awful, but they just somehow, Belichick finds a way to win with whatever group. Cam, no Cam, Brady's gone. You know, Gronk's not there. He finds a way where they are in the conversation. Like, can you believe the Patriots were in the, you know, I don't think they're out of it, but they're in the conversation.
The loss
for most
last
of the year.
Weekend hurt, but yes.
It hurts, but hey, how about we haven't really talked about the Ravens game, but if that game doesn't get played, or is the NFL going to go to 8 playoff teams?
Well, they might have to. Because this is the problem now. The COVID outbreaks after teams have had their byes, and pretty much every team has had their bye now. Right. I think the bye weeks
every
are
team's had their bye. Yeah.
So
every team's had a bye. So they're going to have to go. So if they don't finish the games, their scheduled games of the season, they're going to add one. The way it's going to work is they're going to add one playoff team. Correct.
If they end up needing to use an 18th week to play a bunch of regular season games, then yes, they will add an 8th playoff team in each conference, and that will negate the first round bye for the top seed. So if I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers right now, and he will jump into studio, we'll discuss this a little bit more in the next segment. If I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers right now, I've had my schedule redone twice because they were affected by the Tennessee Titans outbreak much earlier in the season.
Thursday night or two.
Yeah, so Pittsburgh's bye week got messed with. Now, this big showdown with the Ravens on Thanksgiving night, that's pushed aside. And Sunday, the NFL hasn't announced anything, but Sunday looks highly, highly doubtful. Lamar Jackson and others are sick. The Baltimore Ravens have a full-on COVID outbreak on their hands. It's hard for me to envision the league being able to make that game go on Sunday. So let's say that they postpone it. Then when do you play it? You probably have to go to week 18. And I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I'm saying to myself, I'm going to finish potentially undefeated. And even if I'm not undefeated, I'm going to end up with the top seed in the AFC. I would be the one team in the AFC playoffs with a bye week. And that's getting taken away from me. I understand the Steelers' gripe. It's tough in this season. You can't stick a stigma on teams who end up with COVID outbreaks. You can shame them and be pissed off at them if they don't close their facilities fast enough and they mishandle their dealing of their outbreak. But we can't, until we absolutely know how the outbreak began, we can't judge a team for that. It's just unfortunate for the Steelers, and I understand their frustration that they've been affected by all of this.
I want a word with this. We will go to break, but I want a word with, because what player came out on Twitter and said, this is now two times in a row we've lost our Thursday night games?
There were a couple of Steelers. Chase Claypool was one of them.
Yeah, I want to dig into this one a little bit.
Hugh will join us in studio. We'll talk about the Ravens and Steelers and touch on the topic that Ziggy just brought up. Hugh, no doubt, is happy. His Washington football team won. Alex Smith is a great story, like a great story. Good guy with a great story coming back from that catastrophic leg injury. We'll talk about some of the top athletes who returned from devastating injuries to perform at a very high level. We got Tyson and Roy Jones this weekend doing something in a four-sided ring with ropes around it. But I don't know if it's boxing at this point. We'll go over the rules for the Tyson-Jones match. Steve Rapp, Elliot Friedman, and Charles Davis couldn't be with us this morning. It's a strange time. U.S. Thanksgiving, COVID, all that. His flights have been rearranged for his work this weekend, so he had to step aside. Jarrett Bell of USA Today for a little NFL talk. He will fill Charles's shoes. We'll play All or Nothing in about 20 minutes. Got the best of the week and so much more coming up. Feels like it's about 4:15 in the morning, and I haven't had a bottle of water in 6 hours.
And you how feel good is this tune?
Very, very happy.
Very, just, very.
Yeah. Wonder why.
Everybody's beautiful.
Yeah.
If you're listening on the pod right now, you can't hear this, I don't think.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I'll tell you about it. This is from the documentary with Maradona, so you need to watch it.
It's very late 70s, Studio 54.
Now that I'm listening, I knew
this is the start of the documentary.
Yes.
We played it yesterday.
Okay.
That's why I was so pumped up. This is what we're playing at 6:30 from now on.
This could become the show's theme.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great tune.
Do I have a vote on that?
I was messaging
not if it's a no.
I was messaging Santos yesterday saying this music reminds me of the government. It was an after hours a dance club.
Some good nights in the late Queens 90s, Key. Early 2000s. Yeah, down in the port. Wasn't it? Was the government down in the Portlands? I always screw it up. Sound Academy. Well, that's Rebel now, right?
Yeah, that's Portlands. Rebel.
Key, yeah. Yeah.
It was Queens Key towards where the Loblaws is in the West.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Government with a U.
Yeah.
No.
Keep going, Zig. Keep spelling government for us.
Is that, well, it's they didn't spell it government.
Yeah. I remember. So the Pittsburgh Steelers are getting screwed in all of this. Now I've made it pretty clear on the COVID stuff. I don't think we can attach stigma to a team that ends up with a COVID outbreak, because we don't know how it gets into the stream.
Yeah.
Right? There could be a player with a kid who's school-aged, who comes home and is asymptomatic and passes it to dad, and then dad tests negative when he gets to work the next morning, but he's actually got it. And then the next thing you know, 4 or 5 days later, you got a full-on outbreak on your hands at your team's facility. Well, it's the Baltimore Ravens who, and Lamar Jackson, is in an outbreak right now. And last night's game against the Steelers was postponed to Sunday. The Ravens aren't even going to open their facility until Monday at the earliest.
Yeah.
So you tell me how they can play in Pittsburgh on Sunday if they're not allowed to even show up at their facility until Monday. That means that the schedule is going to have to be changed again. That's one line of conversation. Another line of conversation is how Steelers players feel about all of this, because their schedule has been finagled with twice now, because they got caught up in the Tennessee Titans outbreak back in September. And then the third, and this is not a personal gripe, I want to make this very clear, I think it is a, and I'm going to use a big word here, cogent point.
What?
You know the
Hold
word
on, cogent. Let me pull up my dictionary.
Is that like
here.
Salient point?
Salient.
Okay.
Cogent, salient, all makes sense. Why did the San Francisco 49ers get sent out on the field on a Thursday night against the Green Bay Packers 3 weeks ago when they had a COVID outbreak on their hands? They had a positive test plus three or four other players who couldn't play because they had been in the close circle of contact with Kendrick Bourne, the sick player. And the 49ers went out and effectively fielded a practice squad and got the result in that game that you would expect. So if you're carrying an extra bunch of bodies on the practice squad this year, as all NFL teams are, to mitigate against the possibility of an outbreak, why aren't the Ravens sending out their practice squad in Pittsburgh on Sunday?
I have the answer to that, because it's a three-word answer. MVP. Because Lamar Jackson now has COVID, and he's the MVP of the league, and the league doesn't want the Ravens playing without the MVP. I mean, is that a crazy kind of thought?
No, it's not a...
It's not a crazy thought for me, but wasn't... So I tried digging into this one, because I think it's a good point you're bringing up, and I said the same thing, and then a couple of my buddies that are big into the NFL, they said, well, this game got moved before Lamar had it. That's what they said. And I'm like, how can you confirm that? And they said, as much as we know.
Before Lamar tested positive.
Yes.
Not before he had it. Yeah.
So before he tested positive, that's when the game got moved before that. So I was like, okay, well, that theory really doesn't work out. But yeah, I'm with you. I think if a big name goes down,
yeah,
they move the game. They have to. Who's, you know, much more money these games are going to generate, whether a player like Lamar is in the lineup or not.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Ratings, come on.
Everybody wants to see him back there. And with all apologies to the San Francisco 49ers, none of those guys that were out were
okay, but
Lamar
that's fine.
Jackson.
But you can't tell me that Green Bay at San Francisco in a rematch of the NFC Championship from last January isn't a marquee game to have on a Thursday night, right? Wouldn't you want? And if you're, I mean, this is all, you're rolling the dice with this entire season.
Oh yeah.
I have a hard time. If they end up going to a week 18 to play this Ravens Steelers game, you want to put a Ziggy lock on this now? We can make a bet. I bet you that's not the only game that's played in week 18.
No.
Because now that we're all past the bye weeks, Carolina, Tampa Bay have their byes this weekend, and then that's it. Now that we're past the byes, if there are any more outbreaks that push back games, that week 18 is going to be used. There will be an extra playoff team added to each conference, and the top seeds will lose the bye week before their divisional round playoff game.
Here's something to think about. The Ravens are scheduled to play Thursday as well.
So now what?
So their facility, like you say, doesn't open until Monday. They have a game on Thursday. There's a chance here we could be looking at two Baltimore Ravens games postponed or removed from the schedule, however you want to do it. So I think week 18 is in play. Week 18 is definitely in play.
It depends on what the league's, before you jump in, Ziggy, it depends on what the league is doing. If I'm a Baltimore Ravens player who has tested negative and the league already knows that Sunday's game isn't happening, it just hasn't been announced yet. Like, you're in touch with the Ravens, right? Part of the protocol. And you're saying, keep all of the negative tests away from the positive tests, because the negative tests have got to be able to go on Thursday night.
Yeah, they're supposed to play. They're supposed to host Dallas on Thursday.
Oh, well, I mean, you and I and Ziggy, yeah, we could fly to Baltimore, play for the Ravens and beat the Cowboys. How about them Cowboys?
I like our chances.
And Scotty, I like what you said about why does one team have to do it and the other team doesn't. And I mean, how about in baseball? The Marlins?
Miami, and then later St. Louis.
They had to play with a backup squad. Don't fine teams. Don't push games back. Don't dock pay. You want to control it and you want to police it. Make the games mandatory. They have to play them when they're scheduled.
But
that's how you can make teams. Because then you're going to be like, oh, I got to go with my practice squad if COVID breaks out. That's when you have internal accountability on your team. How many teams have gone above and beyond what the NFL has told them what to do? I'm going to tell you, very few.
Here's another
doing
thing.
The bare few. Minimum, yeah.
Here's another thing that could happen. Just speaking hypothetically. A team like Baltimore can't play Sunday, can't play next Thursday. Has to play two games tacked on to the end of the season. So you have a week 18 and a week 19. Then all of a sudden you got some playoff teams who are getting effectively buys, yeah, even if they're not a top seed. And you eliminate the week off in between the conference championship games and the Super Bowl to create that 19th week. Because a team like Baltimore is going to be life and death to make the playoffs. A game against Dallas, if it's two non-playoff teams, forget about it. Right?
We'll get, yeah.
But that game could matter to both teams. Dallas, it shouldn't, but they play in the NFC East. The Ravens might need to play every game because they're going to be right on the edge there with Miami and a couple of other 4, 5, 6 loss teams when it's all said and done.
And I don't think the NFL wants to go to 19 weeks. I think they'll do 18 for sure. Schefter was saying that what they might have to do, is to go by winning percentage. Like it or not, this is what we're doing. It's 2020. Too bad. So sad. You're upset. Doesn't matter. We're going to go winning percentage. That might be the, quote, fairest way to do it. I think that's what we're going to see. I don't think they want to do a 19th week.
Kevin in Ajax makes a really good point on the text line, 590-590. What about the fantasy and gambling aspect of week 18? That's a huge business affected. I would respond to Kevin by saying, well, fantasy leagues are wrapped up by week 16, right? They never throw week 17 in there because some teams might not dress stars if they've made the playoffs home and clear.
And we can't
the Dallas-Baltimore game is not a week 18 game. It's a week 13 game then pushed.
And it sounds strange to be, well, why would the NFL care about somebody's fantasy league? Well, you know what? They won't come right out and say it, but there's a lot of money generated from fantasy leagues and sports betting. So, yeah, that is a concern now, whereas a few years ago, maybe it wouldn't be. So, yeah, this is a real mess. The NFL gets back to its offices today, so we're expecting a decision at least on the Steelers-Ravens game on Sunday. We're expecting that decision today, and then who knows about next Thursday? Like, it's like you said, everything's up in the air.
Yeah, and I don't understand, like, what's the big deal if a game gets moved from Thursday to Sunday? I really don't understand. Like, so what, you miss a long week? Like, I just don't understand. Like, I if it's a Thursday night game of the week, I get it.
It matters to the time. Ziggy, it's U.S. Thanksgiving.
I know it's a big game.
It's a prime time. Yeah. It's a prime time matchup. It's all of those things.
Besides that.
And I'm a Steelers player and I'm thinking, geez, you know, we play our game, hopefully we win, and then I'm out of the facility till Monday or Tuesday.
No, they were supposed to be off until Wednesday of next week. Tomlin
was going to give them a couple of extra days. So they were looking forward to that.
Nice 5-day weekend, yeah.
okay, that's tough to deal with then. If I know I'm going to have 5 days off in the middle of the season and it's not their bye week, right? It's just a Thursday nighter and they don't play till the fall, a week and a half. So
yeah, because they lost their bye. So this would kind of be the de facto bye week for them.
Yeah, that is tough to deal with. But you got to remember that the NFL has a month to play with, right? This, I know that would cause a lot of problems, the Super Bowl not being played in early February, but they can push it back. They've designed their season, not just this year, but it's been designed for natural disasters, some kind of catastrophe. They have it so they can push it back up to 3 weeks. Like everything is set up to push it back. They obviously don't want to do that. They're having fans at the games. You have sponsors. You have, you know,
you've also
broadcasting.
Got, like, you've also got television like contracts and television schedules who are expecting this game to go when it's supposed to go. And that's not a small concern either.
Right.
Yeah.
And,
no,
and
no.
Don't forget that was an NBC game last night.
Yes.
Right. So that was an NBC game that they lost. Yeah. So,
yeah, I don't know. And we talked to Richard Deitch yesterday about the, you know, when do you decide on when to postpone a game? It's literally they're doing it on judgment, and I think that's pretty dangerous. There has to be something like, okay, my starting quarterback, all right, two players of my offensive line, like there has to be something. You know, wide receiver and my number one receiver and running back. Like there has to be something in the books where it's like, okay, now we'll postpone the game. Now we'll cancel the game. And there isn't any of that.
No, you're right, because now they're taking into consideration status of the player, star status. Like, if this is the backup long snapper, we're not talking about a postponement.
I really do think, though, a lot of it has to do with the fact that bye weeks are out of the way now, and they're going to try and jam these games through.
Yep. Oh, they will.
We'll see how it plays out. Sunday seems really doubtful for the Ravens and Steelers. Alex and Guelph, hey, didn't they play a game on a Tuesday earlier this season? I remember because my girlfriend was pissed.
It was the Bills, right? Didn't the Bills play on a Tuesday? It was like 5 o'clock. Game or something.
Kansas City Buffalo, was it a Tuesday? Like it got moved once or twice. There was definitely one Tuesday game, whoever it was. Top of the hour, we'll do our best of the week. And for a more NFL conversation, Jarrett Bell of USA Today will be along at 8:30. So we'll talk about this Ravens Steelers stuff, all the ramifications of that, Mike McCarthy's future in Dallas, and just where the Cowboys go. That feels like an annual conversation at this point. Elliot Friedman at 8 o'clock. Steve Rapp with his you can't call them rap locks. You got locks patented now. The Ziggy locks are patented.
I think he had lines yesterday. So we butt heads sometimes in games.
Oh yeah, I'm looking for. Let's set off the firecrackers today. 416-870-0590. 416-870-0590. We play all or nothing to give away Untuckit gift cards. $100 up for grabs. Be our contestant by calling now. We play on the other side.
It's time to play All or Nothing with Ziggy and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We had a winner yesterday, so $100 in Untuckit gift cards is available in All or Nothing today. Three true or false questions. Get them all right or all wrong and you win, which means if you answer the first one wrong, do not hang up.
Because you have to answer 2 and 3 wrong, Scotty.
Yep. Get them all wrong makes you a winner. Be perfectly imperfect. Let's go to Mississauga for Victor. Good morning, Victor.
Good day to you.
Good luck to you, sir. Ziggy has question number one.
All right. The match 3 features Phil Mickelson and Sir Charles Barkley versus Peyton Manning and Steph Curry. Odds makers have the NBA star and retired QB as the heavy favorites to win. True or false?
So wait a minute. Which one was the one with not Charles on it?
Yeah, so the NBA star and retired QB. So that is Peyton and Steph.
They'd be the big advantage. So true then.
Correct.
That is okay, correct.
Sorry, I misunderstood the question. My bad.
Not a problem. You got it right, and you're in good shape here, Victor.
Okay.
All right, Victor. You doing some Black Friday shopping today, buddy?
I'm looking.
Yeah? What are you looking for?
I'm looking for a corded drill. Everything's cordless.
Victor, okay. If there's only one left on the shelf,
yeah,
don't get violent. Don't.
Behave yourself. If you go out, behave yourself, okay? Here's your second question. Let's talk exhibition boxing. I'll get it right. This weekend, tomorrow, in fact, it's Mike Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr. Oh, my. Two of the all-time greats. It's Jones who actually has more victories in his career than Tyson. Is that true or is that false?
I have to say true.
It is true. Yeah, Jones is 66-9, 47 KOs. Tyson, 50-6, 44 KOs. By the way, there will not be a KO. They've banned KOs from this fight, which is kind of dumb.
It banned whatever. A lot of things.
Yeah. Ear biting, that's it.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's a lot.
All right, Victor, for $100 in Nantucket gift cards. On this day in 2016, the most recent Grey Cup to be played in Toronto went down. And the venue at which that Grey Cup was played in 2016 was the Rogers Centre. True or false?
No, false.
Yeah! Victor knows his stuff. Good man.
That was a tricky question.
That was BMO Field. The 100th Grey Cup in 2012 was Rogers Centre.
Yep.
But BMO Field hosted Ottawa, who upset Calgary 39-33 in that game 4 years ago today. Ziggy Lox versus Steve Rapp coming up at 7:30. Maybe we turn this into...
Oh, you want to do that?
He pick 'em, you pick 'em type situation. You come with your three games, he'll come with his three games. If you want, Siggy, I'll give you a little bit of time. You let that
but
marinate.
I want I wanted to pick the Ravens to win this Sunday.
Well, you know what?
Pre-Lamar.
That line is off the board. That
money line
is, well, got to pick games we think we know are happening.
I think they were going to beat the Steelers.
Oh, we've had a big week of guests and a lot of fun on the show. We will play our best of the week and throw out some opinions and takes based off of those conversations we had. And then Steve Rapp joins us. Given any thought to Ziggy Lox versus Steve Rapp at 7:30?
Not yet. I'm still doing some research.
Still workshopping?
Yeah, I'm working the lines right now.
Okay. Let me know when you hammer out that 12th paragraph of the email for the rest of the team to review. We'll help you with the verbiage.
It's only 4 a.m. on the West Coast. I'm still talking to my guys.
It's only 4 a.m. It's only 2 a.m. in Hawaii. All your buddies who are rich and living in Honolulu.
It's 1 in Hawaii, but who's counting?
Is it 6 hours? I thought it was 5 hours.
No, it's 6.
Okay. Well, we're not going to spend too much time debating that. That clicking sound you hear was the collective audience tuning out when we started debating what time it was in Honolulu.
We need
the damn Leafs and Raps back if we've reached the point where we're talking about Hawaii standard time. I can tell
Maybe
you that.
Got some listeners on the pod from Hawaii. You never know.
You never know. You never know. And they're probably listening later, so they don't even need to know what time it is because it just lives forever. Elliot Friedman will be along, and Jared Bell of USA Today, Charles Davis, had to change his flight to get to his game this weekend, and so he's not able to join us this morning, but will rejoin us at 7 a.m. next Friday. We've had a big week here on the program. The sad passing of Diego Maradona dominated the show yesterday. We got a really, as I say, direct take from MLB player agent and former Blue Jay Jeff Fry on the role that the possibility of playing in Buffalo could play in luring free agents to the Blue Jays for the coming season. Dwayne DeRosario was on the program, and we've had some laughs as well. So let's start with yesterday. Our good buddy James Sharman of Sharman's Proper Pies, sharmansproper.ca, and a soccer expert, as we know, joined us to discuss the life of Diego Maradona, who passed away on Wednesday. And James had a very specific way of describing what it was like to watch Maradona play football.
Flawed genius, mad genius. There was Diego, and then there was Maradona, you know, the off-the-field character and the on-the-field character. And, you know, it's very easy to focus on all the scandals and all the off-the-field issues he had, and there are obviously so many which contributed to his early death, let's be honest here. But the footballer himself, someone that redefined the sport, someone that did so much for the sport in South America and in Europe, you know, in the Italian Serie A, when he moved to Naples. If you focus on the football itself, he changed that league. He brought success to the southern part of that nation. But someone that just played with such incredible passion. And when I say play with passion, I mean that on and off the pitch, because this man packed a lot into that life. He lived hard. There's no doubt about it. But something that, you know, you love or you hate, there aren't too many people in the middle with this guy, to be honest with you. You know, he broke hearts, and he also created dreams as well. So we haven't seen, I don't think, many Maradonas in the sporting world. George Best might be someone who's got a parallel in some regards, but a massive character and an icon, and pretty close to being a household name, whether you're a sporting household or not.
James Sharman on Diego Maradona. And we talked a lot about Maradona yesterday, appropriately, Ziggy, of course. I was thinking about it more, and isn't it strange that death humanizes somebody even more so than living? Because Diego Maradona was a flawed individual, right? There was a lot of stuff off the pitch that was problematic. He was brilliant on the pitch. And I'm sure that there were people in his orbit who were negatively affected by some of the decisions that he made. But as we all stand back as fans of the sport or as fans of this icon, his passing very much humanizes him.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's a great point. I don't have an answer for you. Why, like, why does that happen?
About it this way. And a few years ago, I don't know if you remember, Ziggy, he was managing a team, and he gave a post-match interview, and there was like a 15-second clip where he wasn't even saying words. He was just umming and awing, like, and it became the subject of, it was sad, but it became the subject of ridicule. Right. And mm-hmm. and here at 60 years old, his heart gives out. It's a tragic way to go at still a very young age, 60.
Yeah, he's 60. Like, think about that.
And all of that stuff that we kind of laughed at a few years ago and the problems he had that we, you know, some of us could ridicule, I guess, from an ivory tower. Those subside and you remember, oh, yeah, this guy was a human being.
Well, I think that happens with a lot. I mean, it happens with the superstars in a sport. It happens with any player. I feel like a lot of people kind of lose sight of they're just people at the end. You know, these athletes are just people at the end of the day, but it's hard. They're on TV. You listen to them on the radio. They're doing interviews. They're stars. They do endorsements. But
and typically, when they're doing all that, Ziggy, they're in character. They're either
absolutely
performing their role on the field or the ice or the court or the pitch, whatever you want to call it. And that's who they are in that moment, or when they're pitching a product, or when they're giving an interview, they're all one way, but yeah. we don't see them when the doors close at home. And
but the thing is, no matter how many times we have this conversation, it's not going to change anything. No. Like it, and I hate to break it to everyone out there, but a lot of the athletes you think you know, you probably don't know.
Not like, at all.
You really don't. You know, and I think the majority of them, where you think everything's perfect in their life because you see them make the money, you see them win the championships, you see them on their television, you see them in your product ads, you see them do all this great stuff, but you have no idea what's going on behind the scenes. You don't know their past. You don't know their upbringing. You don't know what demons they have.
I learned the best lesson I learned about that, Ziggy, was a number of years ago, a player I covered. I won't even name the sport because I've covered some hockey. I've covered some baseball, whatever. It doesn't matter. A player I covered left town. And I tweeted on the way out about his accessibility, how approachable he was. If you needed him for something, he was cooperative, this, that, the other thing. And I said he'll be missed from a media perspective. And then later that year, he got charged for roughing up his spouse. And I thought, here I am thinking somebody is a decent dude just because when I approach them at their stall, they're saying yes to interviews, or they'll give me 5 or 10 minutes of their time. So I've made a point since then not to endorse one way or the other, to the good or to the bad, somebody on their way out the door, because I can't pretend like I know this person. I can speak to my own interactions with somebody, but I can't speak to a person's true character based on a couple of minutes here and there every now and then.
Yeah, I really think it's tough to do that. Until you know someone, you know, it's just, you know, it's hard. It's hard too with social media today. I think it makes it even tougher.
Well, right? You also have more direct access if that athlete is active on social media.
You think you have direct access. That's the thing about it, right?
Fair point.
Well, yeah, you follow them on Twitter and they responded to me, or you're on Instagram and you're well, I use the same product. Now I'm using the same product. Like, well, that's me.
I feel that connection.
Yeah, and that can even skew the lines even a little bit more. You know, I feel like I'm not saying, you know, athletes have it worse than you think. I think it can go both. I think it gets pushed both ways, right? You can look at it and say, well, these athletes are so great, but their lives are so much worse, and they deal with all these problems I deal with. But it can go the other way as well, where you kind of build them up to somebody bigger than they are, but they're not, right?
So, and then you find out they're flawed, and then
you get disappointed. Like, I think it goes both ways, right? Like, the athletes have a platform to use, and they're given, you know, preferential treatment. I don't know how else to put that. But then there's also the other side where we build them up, and as soon as something happens to them, or if it happened to anybody else in society, no one would ever talk about it, but they're on the front page for life, you know? So, you know, it's
just a different set of problems, set of problems, and money ain't everything. From Wednesday's show, for some insight into the Blue Jays offseason, we reached out to former Blue Jay and now MLB agent, player agent, Jeff Fry. And he had a specific reason for why free agents would not necessarily want to play for the Blue Jays in 2021.
Well, first of all, customs is not an issue at all. The biggest issue with going to Toronto was taxes. And I'll just tell you, because I had a particular client who went to Toronto, and I also played in Toronto. So the tax was basically, you're going to pay 10% more taxes to play in Toronto. But my experience in Toronto, I love Toronto. And the player that I represented loved Toronto. And as a visiting player, we all loved going to Toronto. You know, now is a different dynamic, obviously, with the COVID and what happened last year. And I don't think we really will know for a few months. What's going to happen? I know players don't want to play in Buffalo as their big league season. I can tell you that. Although I loved playing in Buffalo when it was the AAA team for the Pittsburgh Pirates, Buffalo was the best minor league city, the minor league stadium they're going. But I know players, major league players, don't want to play in a AAA stadium for the entirety of the season, and hopefully that won't be the case next year.
Former Buffalo Sabre having a little laugh. I laugh too. Poor Buffalo.
Buffalo gets a hard time. On the huge, huge sports town. They love it. They love their Bills. Love their Sabres. Wasn't it at one point like the most thriving city in like the east side of the U.S.? Like it was one of the biggest cities, was it not? Like when you look at the history of it, I think at one time Buffalo was like the city.
The city in the U.S.?
You're giving me
when
a look.
When was it I'm the talking, city in the U.S.? I'm Philadelphia talking like 100, was the first capital like, city of the U.S.
I'm talking like 100 years ago. It was like a happening city. I know you're giving me
gotta
this look
I got to do a
right
deeper
now.
Dive into this.
Yeah, no, I think Buffalo was like
this
thriving.
This isn't one of those... Ziggy,
I'm going to throw
Ziggy,
something else out
I
there.
I think I read this once, but I'm not sure I did.
If you do look it up, I'm telling you.
Okay.
Buffalo was like a thriving city. I'm going to throw something at you right now. Just strap yourself in.
All right, I'm strapped.
Lowell was a thriving city as well. It was And the best part is you've never even been there, which makes this more funny. But no, Lowell was an old mill town, right? So it was like, they're all abandoned now, but there's buildings everywhere. There's just nothing in
Lowell
them.
Is abandoned? Like, or not abandoned, but it's...
A lot of the buildings, yeah. Oh, it's tough. It's whatever you've heard from me, it's worse. But Buffalo at one time was like a happening city, and they're revamping downtown Chippewa.
Yes. They've done a very nice job around the KeyBank Center.
They've done. Yeah,
they
absolutely.
Got the hotel that's attached. So you go see a Leaf game, you don't even have to go outside. You can stay in the hotel. You can have a couple of pops at the hotel bar after the game. They've got a sports bar restaurant down at the parking lot level, parking garage level. It's a really nice setup.
Well, something I'm wondering if they let in fans if they allow, you know, the stadium to fill up with whatever 50% capacity. I'm wondering if the borders open, a lot of ifs, if more Leafs fans will go down to Buffalo to watch other players they can't watch this year. Like say there's a Canadian division and COVID loosens a little bit and restrictions, then you want to go and watch your favorite player. I'm wondering if we don't have even more Canadians, you know, across the border because they can't watch them.
Very good point. When I want to go watch Brad Marchand, I will.
Yeah, when you go and watch your Bruins.
Yeah, my Bruins. In my big yellow retro reverse, whatever the hell they're calling it, jersey. On Monday, we learned that Ross Tucker had been messing up the lyrics to Van Morrison's Brown Eyed Girl for his entire life. He thought the song started with Hey Rodrigo for all this time, and then his sister-in-law corrected him back in the summer. Somehow that conversation turned into Ziggy unveiling the most bizarre conspiracy theory in Canadian music history.
I don't know if it's so much a lyric, but, well, yeah, it is a lyric. The artist is Kim Mitchell.
Okay.
Is it Patio Lantern or Patio Lanterns?
Patio Lantern.
Great tune, but he's not singing about two guys named Patty O'Lantern.
I'll tell you this.
So it's not Patty, P-A-D-D-Y, O'Lantern. It's actually Patio Lanterns.
Right, yeah. It's a patio, like go sit out on your patio, and there are lanterns.
On the patio.
Right.
Okay.
But
I'm just saying,
if Leadoff ever opens a pub, if we ever go into business and invest...
Sounds like a
pub.
Good idea.
We
right
will
about now.
Call it an Irish. It'll be an Irish pub that we call Patty
O'Lanterns.
Done. O apostrophe Lanterns.
Did you guys always know it was Patty O'Lanterns and not Patty? Like, yeah, you never thought it was a guy's name?
No.
No, thought it was...
Okay.
Patio. Like, where you sit on a summer night, or even in your backyard, patio lanterns.
That got a lot of action.
That did.
On the text line and on Twitter.
Got a lot of action
because
on
there's,
the text. Yeah.
There's some people out there that were like, let me think about that one for a second. That actually did.
And then they thought about it for a second. And then they moved on.
We need to ask Kim Mitchell about that.
And how about this from yesterday's show? Poor Tim Leeper. We made him play a game. Human or hyena? Human or hyena? You need to guess out of these two laughs, which is the human and which is the hyena. So let's go with laugh number one. Let's replay.
We got to play that one. Wasn't it?
Replay, yep. Laugh one. Now, laugh two. Which one is the human and which one is the hyena?
It sounds like a chihuahua. I'm going to say the first one is a hyena and the second one is human, just because my mind tells me that they're the opposite. But whose laugh is this anyway? This is a really, really tired laugh. Wow. I'd hate to go through life with this laugh.
Yes, Leap.
That's unbelievable.
That's correct.
Jerk.
Well, you're wrong and then you're correct.
And you also,
for sure.
You also heard Ziggy laughing underneath laugh number one, so you damn well know that laugh one is a human.
But the first laugh was so bad I couldn't hear the other one because I was just so focused on the hideousness.
Leap thinks you're a hyena. Laugh. That's pretty much what he's saying right now.
Laugh number one.
A tired hyena.
You know what?
I think
I'm never laughing again. Yep. I'm not laughing at anything anymore on this show. I've had some really bad laughs.
Be careful.
Are we going to have Ziggy Lox versus Steve Rapp?
There's some good games
this
Sunday.
Good games.
Like, if you want to bet this Sunday, it is one juicy lineup. Let me tell you. Like, I want to dig into more than three, maybe.
All right. Ooh, getting aggressive. Elliot Friedman, Jarrett Bell of USA Today for some NFL talk. Steve Rapp coming up. And there is some breaking news, a major piece in the Globe and Mail that we need to touch on. And we will do that coming up. All right, so you just heard in Hughes' bottom of the hour sports update that there is a front page story in the Globe and Mail that Rogers, who of course owns this radio station, Rogers Communications, along with Brookfield, is considering and working with the various levels of government, including the federal government, which owns the land on which Rogers Center sits, is considering a plan that would see the raising of the current Rogers Center and the building of a brand new baseball-specific stadium on the southern end of that site. The northern end of that near 13-acre site would contain residential buildings. So there is some movement afoot here. And this is one of those things, Ziggy, that has long been discussed in this city. The desire for a more baseball-specific stadium and a baseball-specific experience. And if you go back to the construction of what was then SkyDome, the Rogers Center, it was a marvel at the time. It was a technological marvel at the time. retractable roof, a multi-purpose facility that could host the Toronto Blue Jays, that could host other sporting events, that could host concerts, fairs, bunch of different things. It was incredible when it opened in 1989, and it opened with huge anticipation. And then just a few years later, the Baltimore Orioles opened up Oriole Park at Camden Yards in 1992, and that ushered in the 1990s stadium boom in baseball, where a lot of teams went away from the cookie cutter experience to the retro old school baseball feel, and it left us in Toronto wanting. And perhaps now we are learning of the early stages that are afoot to make some significant changes to the city's waterfront area.
I mean, I think we all knew this was going to happen at some point. It's been talked about. How many rumors have you heard? Okay, yeah, the Sky Dome's coming down. It's not a baseball park-friendly stadium anymore. Everything's changing to these modern parks, maybe something like, you know, where, you know, San Fran plays. I've been gorgeous to their park, and it, yeah it's gorgeous. Is it? Yeah, Pittsburgh's park. I'd go on my balcony, and you know, when I was in Pittsburgh, I lived right across the river from that ballpark. It was absolutely amazing. So the other part of it is, well, why now? When people ask me about Toronto, there's always a handful of things. Usually it's, well, we had the tallest building in the world, and now that's not the case. It's, what, the third tallest building after the building in Dubai, and I think there's one in Shanghai, right? So that was one thing. The second usually thing that comes up is, oh, you guys have the retractable roof. Like, how many stadiums had retractable roofs?
Back then, none.
In the 90s, right?
Back then, none, but they're now just a regular thing.
I know, but back then, so that's what people would always ask me about, and I feel like it's still one of those things. So, I mean, you have to wonder if at some point, would it have been a historical landmark? Like, is there a certain time? And I messaged a couple of my buddies that are, you know, in the building world in Toronto, and that's kind of one of the questions I had. Like, if this goes on too long, like, I feel like the Sky Dome is kind of, we know it, Rogers Center now, you know, would have been a historical landmark, and they have to make a move on it to either revamp it or tear it down. You don't know if that's, you know, part of the city codes and stuff. I think it's time. I'm not against building a new park for the Jays. Something on the water would be really nice. Like, down towards Cherry Beach, where there's a lot of like movie production buildings and warehouses, you know, a lot of those are vacant. And you know, I've always had the conversation on, hey, would you ever develop these for, you know, the city? And I don't think the land there's, you know, they don't consider that land there to be, you know, a premium, but for a ballpark and to develop that waterfront where no one wants the land, if they could do something like that, I think it would be great.
Yeah, it'd be quite something. I mean, the other question that you have is, we can't deal with this right now, Steve Rapp is waiting for us, is where would the Blue Jays play? Well, the brand new stadium is being constructed. If you tear down Rogers Center and build back on that property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's kind of, that's tough, right? I don't like the idea. What's one of the options? I just read cutting the building in half and then renovating it. I don't know. Like, how would that work?
Yeah, we're starting to do a little too deep a dive, baby, because yeah, we've just been presented with this information, right?
So, yes. Yeah, so they'd chop it in half and then kind of, you know, outfit it to be a park. And I don't know how that's even possible. Anyway, but
fire us a text to 590-590. Your thoughts on the possibility of a new baseball stadium in Toronto. Skydome Rogers Center is going to turn 32, which is hard to believe, in early June of 2021. For his weekly hit with us, we welcome our good buddy from Inside the Lines, 10 o'clock each and every Sunday morning here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. He hosts alongside George Russick and Dave Bastel. And from Sports Interaction, our buddy Steve Rapp. Good morning, Mr. Rapp.
Good morning. I'm bearing the lead on that story for me, and that is the end of the talk that there will be a 75,000-seat stadium for NFL football. So the guy that I made the bet with over 20 years ago that there will never be an NFL team, maybe he'll finally pay me.
when does that bet come due, Steve? Because it's like Cosmo Kramer with the levels on Seinfeld. If you could always build the levels.
Yes.
You always could.
You could build levels.
It's always possible.
Yeah.
But if you never do, well, then the bet just keeps going and going and going. I mean, Toronto could have an NFL team in 80 years. That won't be relevant to you, me, or Ziggy. But it doesn't mean it's impossible.
Yeah, I thought the guy had a little more understanding of the fact that at some point you just have to say, you know what, I should pay this bet. But it hasn't been that way. But I think that pretty much puts that one to bed. Because you're building a baseball only stadium, there, you know, you're not going to then turn around and build a $3 billion 75,000 seat stadium. So there you go. No NFL team in Toronto, like many of us have been predicting for a long time.
Right. It has long felt that was the way that it was going to be. All right, pal, let's get right to it. We've got the Carolina Panthers at the Minnesota Vikings, and the Vikes are favored by 3.5.
Yeah, and Ziggy, I heard a little bit earlier that you might be interested in some sort of challenge. So if there are any games here that you disagree with and would like to go the other side, I'm suggesting maybe the loser buys the winner next season a nice round of golf at a golf course. It isn't like Tam O'Shanter or anything.
I actually live near Tam O'Shanter, so that's my home course. Thank you for putting it down.
Thank you. Sorry. I could have picked a lot of them. I don't know why. Yeah, what I know for my youth.
It's a favorite. It's a favorite because it's a goat ranch, but it's okay. That's my home course. Thanks for
all right. Well, then I'll accept that. My home course is Windad, so I mean,
Now we're talking.
Minnesota opened as a 4-point home favorite, but public tickets are split 50-50. The line did move to Carolina on news that Teddy Bridgewater is possible. Odds makers decided that was worth a half point. To my advantage, it now sits at 3.5, as you mentioned. The Vikings had won in 3 in a row before getting caught in a bad spot and fell asleep against the Cowboys team coming off a bye. Minnesota's Dalvin Cook leads all running backs in total yards against the Panthers defense that ranks 25th against the run, second last in the league in defending running backs catching passes. Teddy Two Gloves may be back for Carolina, but Christian McCaffrey probably is not. The Vikings have been a very good favorite under Mike Zimmer, going 41-23 against the spread under his reign and 41-21 against the spread in November and later. They usually take care of business against inferior teams. The Panthers got a win against a sweeping Lions team last week. I don't think they will find the Vikings sleeping here coming off a bad loss. I'm going to lay the favorite 3.5 at home.
Yeah, I got Minnesota. So
yeah, okay. Well, next one, yeah.
Next one. So okay. So next game, Vegas 6-4 at Atlanta, 3-7. Vegas is 4-1 in the road this year. They're favored by 3, though. Who do you got?
Oh, this one might be one here. A couple things that drive me this matchup: the current number versus the opener, and fading a big steam move here, Ziggy. The game opened pick, but Raiders hung with the Chiefs, and the Falcons threw that stinker in New Orleans. The line started to climb based on public perception. It now sits all the way Raiders -3 on the road, and I think that's too much. A potential letdown game for Las Vegas, who threw everything they had at Kansas City, just came up short on primetime. Now they have to travel on the road as chalk. The Falcons can score. It's pretty much the only thing they can't do, and don't usually have back-to-back offensive flops like they did last week. With a total of 54, this one should be a shootout. Last team with the ball may win. I like +3 in that situation. When the Falcons don't protect Statty Ryan, like last week, we get a sleepy Atlanta result. The Raiders don't have the Saints type of pass rush, or I'm expecting an Atlanta bounce back. And finally here, at fading big steam moves. Basically, when a line continues to move because the public keep betting it, that's known as steam. Fading the steam this year has been hitting at 63% this season. I am going to fade away, and I'm going to take Atlanta +3. Taker?
All right, so I got Vegas. So here it is. That's our golf match. Is that just we're doing a one-gamer today? This weekend?
We'll do one game, or see the next one. See if you like the next one better.
Okay. All right.
Oh, Scotty.
That's a very agreeable couple of people here. I like this.
It's fine. I love checking. New Orleans and Denver.
Okay. We got New Orleans. Yeah, we got New Orleans favored by 6. So slightly less than a touchdown on the road at the Bronx.
Okay, the number stayed solid all week with the Saints a 6-point road favorite in Denver. Public on the Saints, bigger bets on the Broncos, still doesn't move the number. This is a big number for a third-string quarterback to have to cover on the road, especially one of the toughest environments to play in, even without fans. I find it interesting that while Taysom Hill looked okay against the sleeping Falcons defense, he was only asked to lay 3.5 points at home. Now Hill and the Saints are asked to lay almost double that on the road. Jury's still out on Drew Lock. They may be close to finished, actually. But his performances have come, better performances have come at home, like last week in the surprise win against Miami and the late charge against the Chargers. The Bronco defense completely confounded two in the Miami offense last week. And the Bronco offense, while only putting up 20 points, racked up 459 yards of offense against a pretty good Dolphins defense. Denver plus 6. You know, how you ask a guy to lay 3.5 at home against Atlanta and then 6 on the road in Denver? Doesn't make sense to me. Denver plus 6. What's your choice, Ziggy?
All right, so Steve, before we get to... Okay, you deal with New Orleans, so Denver.
I've got Denver as well. So
all right, Las Vegas, Atlanta it is.
So I got Vegas minus 3.
Okay, so you got Vegas minus 3. Steve's got the Falcons to cover. Now, Steve, we're going to keep you on the line for Ziggy Locks. We usually do these at the end of the show, but Ziggy, you know, he's got his chest puffed out. So he'll pick his 3 games, and you give him a little bit of feedback.
Okay.
All right. So I was going to actually run through. Do we have time for all of them this morning?
Sure, let's rip through them, baby.
We'll run through. Okay, so we'll start. I'm on Sports Interaction right now. Minus 2, the Cardinals. I've got Arizona. You just want me to pick them, or do you want me to state the name?
You got Arizona favored by 2 at New England. Okay.
Makes sense. So Kyler Murray's shoulder. Yeah. Makes sense. Okay. Kyler Murray's shoulder a little hurt. Larry Fitzgerald on the not playing this game, but DeAndre Hopkins is. So, yeah, I probably agree with that.
And then I said I got Minnesota. We both got them. Right?
Yeah.
My next one, I've got Jacksonville. I think they're going to win outright.
Home against the Brownies.
Yeah, and the Browns are favored 6.5 right now.
You've heard of Mike Glennon before?
Mike Glennon, my God.
Is he not quarterback? Yeah. Because I understand that that if things go well, this game will in fact be Luton free.
But here's the thing, Steve, with the Browns are winning by the skin of their teeth each week.
They're beating teams they should beat. No, they've been beating teams they should beat. I mean, they struggle. They were 3.5. They win by 3 2 weeks ago on that Nick Chubb running out of bounds on the 1. The teams they should have beaten, they have beaten. Yeah, I don't like laying points on the road, but I'm not sure how you're taking Mike Glennon and a team that's tanking against a playoff team. But I agree, laying 6 on the road is probably not a good thing to do with a Cleveland Browns team. They're not trustworthy.
All right, then I got Vegas, you've got Atlanta, and then the next one after that, I'm going with the Bills, minus 5.5 over the Chargers.
So this is a fourth Ziggy lock.
I'm running through all of them right now.
Oh, my God.
Lock them all. I'm feeling good this weekend.
Okay.
Yep. Now I'm going to go.
Every Chargers game has been close. I don't trust. They go out quick. They come back in the second. They give it up the second half. Bills not a well. I guess they can score. They put a lot of up against Seattle. Yeah, it's not making my card. I have no opinion. Let's just say that I just don't.
All trust, right. Then I got Miami minus 7. I'm gonna go.
So does every Joe Public and their cousin. But yeah, okay, go ahead.
Then I'm going. I'm gonna go with the Bengals plus 6.
Bengals. Plus 6. who's quarterbacking for them?
I don't even know.
His name is not Joe Burrow.
Joe Burrow. Yeah.
No, Joey Covers isn't there to get you that cover in that game. You know that, don't you? Right.
Oh yeah.
That's not one I would take. I'm just waiting for you to get to LA, San Francisco, so that we can hear what Scotty has to say.
All right. Then I've got the Colts minus 3.
Home to Tennessee. divisional game.
That's a really tough game. Good luck with that one.
And you love Philip. You love Philip Rivers.
Yeah, and he killed me last week. And again, he killed me last week. Like I said, if I go against Philip Rivers, fantasy owners feel good about it because he went and had a fantasy day, because that's what Philip Rivers does to me personally. I think that he does it personally to me.
And then, I was going to pick Ravens money line, even with the guys injured, but now Lamar's not going, so that game's not on. I'm going to go with the Broncos. You got the Broncos as well. Then I'm going Rams -6.5.
I agree.
And then, I agree you got with that one.
Yeah, even though the Niners are coming off the bye, I agree with it.
I've got
Letdown spot for the Rams coming off of that big win last week. You got San Francisco off the bye. It's gone from 7.5 to 6.5. That's a pretty sharp move over the key number 7. That makes me think San Francisco might be the play there.
Then I've got KC -3.5.
Wow, tough game.
At Tampa Bay.
Yeah, that half point. I mean, it's not prime time, so Tom Terrific might not have an accident in bed because it's not prime time. He's been horrible on prime time. Good during the afternoon.
And then I've got the Bears +8.5. And that's it.
Mitchell Trubisky. Yeah, that's right.
you know, that's too many games. You can't have opinions. You can't bet all those games. That is your number one problem.
I'm on Sports Interaction. I'm feeling it right now.
And I don't, you're I don't sports, have enough.
Then go ahead. Bet them all. Bet them all.
I don't have enough characters on my one tweet to throw all of that out there. So I'm going to have to whittle Ziggy down to 3 picks. By the end
make
of the
sure,
show.
I'm going to make sure Philip Gregg over at Sports Interaction gives you a nice bonus for being such a good character, a good customer, and betting every bet game on the card.
At 10 o'clock Sunday morning, Inside the Line, Steve. We'll do it again next Friday. We always look forward to it.
Thanks. This was fun, guys. Thank you.
You bet. Steve Rapp of Inside the Lines with Bastel and Russick alongside him Sunday mornings at 10. And you can get all the numbers on the Sports Interaction website, sportsinteraction.com. Something to chew on. And then Elliot Friedman coming up. We'll announce our Jiffy qualifier on the other side of Hugh's top of the 8 o'clock hour update. The big news this morning, the possibility that Rogers Center will be raised and a brand new baseball stadium will be built on the Rogers Center site. This is a front page of the Globe and Mail article. The land is owned by the federal government. The building, of course, is owned by Rogers. And according to Globe and Mail's reports, Rogers and Brookfield are looking at going in on a multi-billion dollar renovation of that near 13-acre space, baseball stadium and residential, effectively condos.
Two things excite me about this story. First of all, privately funded, which is great. I mean, at least right now, there's no plan to use public money, which is fantastic. Secondly, natural grass. Love it. Although, if you're playing, you know, games in late March, early April, that, you know, that might be a challenge to keep that grass healthy.
They do it in Milwaukee, where they have done it there, and it'll run your electricity bill up.
Oh, yeah.
But there's very specific lighting. In when you work in Miller Park after a game and everybody's gone home, but you're still doing your work, they throw these lights onto the field.
Like heat lamps?
Yeah,
almost,
heat or lights or something that replicates sunlight.
Okay.
Effectively, because Milwaukee can be quite cloudy. It can be cold in April and early May and then late September, all of that stuff. So,
what about down by the lakefront? That's like, well, kind of like their plan
Ziggy,
B.
Yeah, Ziggy was talking about how good would it be at Cherry Beach or somewhere like that.
Well, they're talking about maybe
the Ontario place.
Yeah.
You know, somebody said knock down the golf ball. That's the Cinesphere.
That's right. Four.
Knock down the old IMAX. Love that. Mm. But no, this gets us talking. I have very close and fond personal ties to SkyDome Rogers Center. So my experience in Rogers Center, I think, is a little different than many, but I understand why it's cavernous. It's not baseball friendly, and we could do better. And if this is the start of something, this report is the start of something big. People are saying, well, can't the Blue Jays play in Buffalo well, the new stadium is being constructed. Well, I think we're still a ways from the demolition of Rogers Center and the construction of Rogers Center, such that the expectation would be it would be all done in the year 2021. I don't think that that is a realistic thing. But an exciting piece of news on the front page of the Globe and Mail this morning. Something to chew on for great Canadian meat. Elliot Friedman coming up, and Jarrett Bell of USA Today. We're all over the NHL and the NFL next hour. We're cleaning out our prize closet with the help of Jiffy, and we've made mystery boxes which contain signed jerseys and more for you to win. To enter, you need to listen during Good Show, Writer's Block, and Tim and Sid every weekday to collect keywords, and then you text them to 590-590 with your first name, last name, and city. Then you tune in weekday mornings around this time for your chance to qualify. So we're about to tell you the name we drew from all of the entries that we got yesterday, the last qualifier for this week. If you hear your name, you've got 590 seconds to call us back, and you'll immediately win $100 to spend at Jiffy, and you will qualify for this week's mystery box, which we will open on the air at 7:30 Monday morning, and we will announce the winner at that time. We've drawn the name Nat Lanzalotta from North York. Nat Lanzalotta from North York. Your 590 seconds to call us starts now. 416-870-0590. 1-888-666-0590 or star 590 on your cell. Everyone else, stay tuned for the next keyword during Good Show after 9 a.m. And you can check out sportsnet.ca/590 for all of our contest details. All right, the breaking news on the front page of the Globe and Mail today. Rogers and Brookfield are considering and working toward the possibility of raising the Rogers Center and building a new baseball-specific stadium on said site with a residential component. The federal government owns the land. As we know, Rogers, which also owns this radio station, owns the building. Shai Davidi is good enough to jump on last minute to tackle this issue with us. Shai, this is a big breaking story on the front page of the Globe and Mail. What is your sense of how far down the road this particular can has been kicked?
Well, if it's leaking at this point, then it's pretty far down the road. And this has been in the work quietly behind the scenes for a while. And, this is the first time I'd heard that they were considering demolishing the entire stadium. You know, their various iterations where it was, you know, removing the hotel, removing parts of the stadium, but trying to keep the existing base and tying some of the other developments into the space that they would be able to create around it. But this sort of complete reimagining of the entire space that they have right now is a little bit more substantial than I would have thought. You know, the initial considerations began with some of the rail deck park considerations and could they tie into that. But this is sort of pushing it a little bit more south and then taking that space and creating some of the condos and public spacing that they want to add in behind that. So it's a bit more substantial of a project than I think some of us thought, which is why you've heard Mark Shapiro say a number of times, you know, this is no longer a Blue Jays project. This is more of a Rogers project. And I think if these are the plans that end up being finalized, you can understand why.
So if they end up tearing it down, would they, where would they play? And is part of this decision maybe the fact that, hey, it worked out in Buffalo, maybe they can play there for a year or two?
I don't think that's a factor, because I don't know where they would play, and I don't think that Buffalo is something that they want to do forever. And remember that Buffalo also has its own baseball team, and that you're not just going to sort of boot that baseball team out of there as well. So I don't know that that's really right now the primary question, where they would play. And could they build something temporary in the interim? Could they stomach that kind of revenue hit during the construction period? There are a number of questions there that are unanswered at this point.
Could they give Montreal a little love and move into Olympic Stadium for a year or two? Just off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Perhaps,
but again, you know, Major League Baseball considers that facility, you know, suitable for a game or two every year.
Right.
They don't consider it suitable for 81. It's not, you don't want your players on that surface for 81 games. So there would have to be substantial renovations for that to happen. But there are significant questions as to what that does to your fan base, right? If they are disconnected from your team for an extended period of time, what does that do for your revenues for a substantial period of time? I think because of the pandemic, every team is okay, we can survive 1 year without revenues, without gate-driven revenues. But for an extended period of time, that becomes a little bit more difficult. So that's certainly the million-dollar question today, and one that, you know, I'll be doing some digging in on.
Shai Davidi is our guest. He's a Blue Jays and MLB insider for Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. You're listening to Leadoff, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Was this a decision more from the Jays organization, the team standpoint, how, you know, maybe this facility's been aging, you know, they want a new surface to play on? Or was this more a business decision, you think, from Rogers and saying, you know what, we bought the original Sky Dome, you know, Rogers Center now for $25 million, and, you know, them and the Jays are, you know, it's worth almost a couple billion dollars right now, and they want to cash in?
Well, it's a bit of both, Mike. The Blue Jays have been saying for a long time, if we want to increase our revenues, the only lever we have to do that right now is to improve the stadium and to create more of the amenities and create a lot of the revenue streams that several teams around the majors have created in recent years. You think about the most recent being Atlanta and Texas, where, you know, the stadiums are part of this multi-use development where, you know, people aren't just coming to the ballpark and leaving. People are coming to the ballpark and they're hanging out in some of the bars. They're doing some of the shopping there. Maybe they live there. It's a completely different experience. So I think the initial thought from the Blue Jays is we need to renovate the building. And then as some of those costs started piling up, it became, well, you know, if we're going to spend this much money, why don't we go this far and make it into a much bigger project? So I think that's how that process went. And there was an opportunity there because initially, you know, a lot of this started because of the rail deck park considerations that would have covered over the train tracks just to the north of the building and created some more green space downtown. And it was, okay, well, what can we do with that space? How can we develop that space? Instead it's shifted south a little bit and using mostly the existing footprint that they have right now.
Shai, there is much more at stake here than just the luring of free agents in the 2021 class. So I understand that when I ask this question, but I mean, we've had a player agent on the program this week, Jeff Fry, and it's been stated publicly by others and I'm sure privately by many, many more that where the Blue Jays play in 2021 could affect the decision of some free agents the Blue Jays are interested in, whether they come to Toronto or not. I wonder if this is a nice little, now that it's out there, a nice little grenade thrown into the fire saying, hey, you come to Toronto, you could be helping us open a state-of-the-art stadium in a few years.
You know, I think the timeline on this is so far down the road, Scotty, that...
So you think it's more like a 5 or 6 year thing before we're sitting down and watching a game in a brand new park?
I would think so, because, look, I mean, there are so many regulatory phases that you have to go through. So the land that the Dome is owned right now is still owned by the federal government. It's zoned only for the usage of a sports stadium. So you'd have to get all that land completely rezoned. And that's one of the reasons why the dome sold for only $25 million. Everyone is always saying, oh, the land's so valuable, the land's so valuable. Well, the land isn't that valuable because the only thing that you can do with it right now is have a sports stadium on top of it. So they'd have to get that rezoned. Obviously, you'd have to go through all the different regulations at the other levels of government. You'd have to plan it out. You'd have to start construction. You know, we're looking at years as opposed to something that's, several years as opposed to something that's just a couple-year project. So, if you're a free agent that's signing here, unless they're giving somebody a 10-year contract, which I wouldn't expect, you know, this isn't going to be in the lifespan of any deals that they'd be signing this offseason, I would think.
Well, regardless, there's a buzz in the air. Thanks for doing this last second, pal. Appreciate it. And we'll certainly be following your tweets and your writing on this this big story. Thank you.
It's fascinating. Absolutely. Ben.
Shai Davidi, the Blue Jays and MLB insider for Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. From 31 Thoughts, the podcast, 31 Thoughts, the column on sportsnet.ca, Hockey Night in Canada, and the NHL on Sportsnet for his weekly hit. He's been waiting on the line very patiently, and we welcome Elliot Friedman. Thanks for hanging in and indulging us while we cover the breaking news out of the Globe and Mail this morning. Elliot, at the very least, there's some buzz. I think this is what a lot of people have wanted for a long time. And if it's coming out publicly, there must be some there.
There's a few things I think of. Well, obviously, I read the story this morning, and the reporter has very clear sources and documentation. Like, you know, basically, this story has been confirmed for, you can tell. There's a kind of a few reactions. Number one is I have people texting me saying, you got bumped for Shai Davidi. How embarrassing. So that's reaction number one.
So you've hacked Ziggy's DMs on Twitter? Is that the...
yes. Okay. Yes. Number two, I have to tell you that it's the funniest thing about this is, like, I have buddies of mine who aren't in the business, and they're like, I know how you get scoops. And I'm like, okay, how? And they go, because you work for Rogers, and they own everything, so they tell you everything. And I'm like, that is the exact reverse of what happens at this place. Like, they tell us nothing. Like, everybody thinks that Rogers tells us all the... No, it's like... So, like, the fact that, like, they could come on this morning and have this story... And Shai would be playing catch up on it. It's perfectly normal. Like, it just makes me laugh, actually. And the final thing I have to think about is there's a lawyer named Jeff Citrin who is used to work for the NHLPA. He's now in practice for himself, and he sent me a proposal years ago about a new downtown ballpark. He's a big baseball fan. And he did like a piece years ago about a proposal for a downtown ballpark, outdoor, no roof in Toronto. And whenever something like this comes up, he's the guy I think about because he's been trying to do this for years. Very smart guy.
We got to get to some hockey.
Okay.
And I'm going to ask you the question that I ask, I feel, at the start of every conversation these last few weeks. Where exactly are we in the conversations or lack of conversations between the league and the PA as we try to push toward the start of a season?
So, Scott, every time I answer these questions right now, I start off by saying, I think we're going to play. I know it doesn't look pretty right now, but I still think we're going to play. I refuse to believe in the war games, mutually assured destruction. That do I think that there are some people here who look at the economics and say it's smarter not to play? Yes, I think they do, but there are some. But I think that the majority of the people, from the players to the commissioner to teams, want to play. They realize the alternative is worse. And I think the pressure will get ratcheted up again next week when the NBA teams are supposed to go to camp. I mean, who knows? With everything that's going on right now, are they actually going to go to camp? But they're supposed to start to go to camp. I do think that's going to ratchet up the pressure even more. However, right now we're like in a World War I style. You're in that trench and I'm in this trench and we're just going to stare at each other. They haven't talked in a week. There's some raw feelings on both sides. The players are upset. We know why. I will tell you that I think some owners are very upset at some of the comments by the players. I joked with you last week about the one who called me about the line. It's never been cheaper to borrow money. I think that line specifically really pissed off some owners. I do, who say, look, this is serious. So I think there's some feelings that are pretty raw. And I think that everybody needs to calm down. I think the players have said they don't want to make a counter proposal. So it's kind of like, okay, who's going to make the next move? But I still believe we're going to play. I don't know if it's going to be an easy solution, but I just think the alternative is going to be worse.
Yeah, I was going to say it's kind of quiet on my end. I haven't heard much, and I'm sure you hear more than I do, but is that a good thing that it's...
I don't know about that, Ziggy.
Is that a good thing that it's... I feel like it's better that it's quiet than if we hear either side talk about negotiations.
Well, the thing about that that I think is very true is I've had some guys directly tell me I'm going dark on you. And the reason is, you know, last week when I wrote the blog about how upset the players were, and there were other people who covered it too, there were several people who said, you know, it is not a good idea right now for us to be airing our dirty laundry because, A, it's not productive, and, B, like, look at what's going on in the world. Do you think you need to have this fight? You know, baseball's fight got really ugly and really public. It hurt the sport. I do think there are people both in the league and the Players Association who say we do not need this right now. We absolutely do not need this.
So, I mean, we can't answer this question. I mean, heck, if we could, Elliot, then the answer would already be on the table and this problem would be solved. But is there going to have to be, and I'm talking about the increased clawbacks that the owners now want. The players say we have the July agreement. Is there going to have to be a meeting in the middle on where both sides are now? Are the players going to have to give a little more to get us there?
I think they may, but, you know, I can't see it. Like, the thing about the escrow caps going up, I don't know how we get there. I mean, that is such raw meat to the players. I just don't know that how we're going to get, like, the deferment, I think, could happen. I said that last week. I say it again. I do think that the salary deferment, depending on the payment schedule, is a possibility. But the escrow thing is so tough. You know, one of the things the players have kind of said to me is, you know, what do we get in return for doing this? And I ran that by, you know, some of the people around the league and ownership and management stuff. And they're like, what they get is to play. And I don't think the players are really happy with that answer. You know, one of the things I've been kind of thinking about, guys, is that if I'm the players, one of the things I'm coming at them with here is, okay, I know you don't want to expand the playoffs, but we need the revenue. I know you don't want to put ads on jerseys, but we need the revenue. And if you're asking us to take a bit more of a haircut, whether temporary, because if it's escrow, they'll never see that money. If it's deferment, they probably will. If you're asking us to take a haircut, even if it's temporary, you know, what we need in return is, you know, there's been some things that can grow revenues in this game, and particularly the idea, like Berkey's probably having a coronary right now because he hates the idea of the ads on jerseys. Mm-hmm. But if I'm a player saying, you know, I know it's tradition, but we need to grow the revenues. And, you know, I know that the league feels very strongly at the top of it that it's a hard tournament to get into, the Stanley Cup, and 16 out of 31, certain to be 32, is fair. But, you know, we're about to do a TV deal. If you have another round of playoffs, a play-in, doesn't it make it more valuable? There's a number of teams that will tell you when they make the playoffs, their sales go up, season tickets, all their revenues. If we give four more teams the opportunity to try to make it in, won't the revenues go up? Like, if I was the players, that's what I'd be arguing for. I know there's a tradition. I know our jerseys are pure, whatever. That's what Berkey says. And I know he's not the only one who feels that way. You know what? Like,
well, here,
I know, Elliot, I know it's nice, but too bad. Times change.
Here's the thing, Elliot. I don't think we're moving to the Swiss League jersey style, right?
Yeah, it's going to be a small, add someone.
Yeah, does the NBA, do NBA jerseys bother us? I mean, I'll speak only for myself. They don't bother me at all.
And no, same here.
Every team has a sponsor kind of on the upper left chest in this day and age, and yep. You hardly notice it, and you don't feel at all like the logo's compromised.
I completely agree with that. And, you know, I think that's what we – if I was a player, that's what I'd be arguing. I'd say, okay, like, I know the traditions of the sport are very good, and the Stanley Cup Final and playoffs are hard to get into and win, but you know what? We got to start making more money here, and these are revenue avenues that – you know, can help us. So that's what I'd be arguing for if I was a player. I mean, Ziggy, you were a player. Do you think I'm nuts, or do you think I got something?
No, not at all. I'm for the expanded playoffs just in general, but especially in these times, if they're trying to figure out other ways to generate more revenue, I'm all for it. Well, I can't get past still, and believe me, I want the players to get every single dollar, and I don't want to keep going back to this, but okay, they come to an agreement in July on a new CBA, but they had no idea, well, some idea that there might be a shortened season this coming year.
Yeah.
Why isn't it just prorated? Like, keep everything the same and it's prorate. You play 48 games, it's going to be prorated. I don't understand why the players have such a hard time with that.
The reason is, Mike, because they were under the impression during negotiations and they feel quite strongly that this was the way it was argued, and they feel that, you know, the 72% gross that they agreed to was their deal, whether they played one game or 82 games. That's what was communicated to them. Now, was it communicated wrongly? They say no. They feel that the NHL knows that's exactly what the way the deal was done. So, I mean, look, the reason the players' feelings on this are so raw is that they just made a deal and they feel they're being asked to change the deal. And the league looks at it quite simply from a business point of view. This is 50-50 and it's not going to be 50-50. So like the thing is, like, the world is so completely screwed up right now. I understand how you can make a deal and look at it 4 months later and say, you know, hey, we got to change this. But that doesn't mean if I was a person who was, the deal was being changed on, like a player, I wouldn't be furious about it. The other thing I think that's at play here is, as you guys know, including in here in Toronto, there's some NHL teams that own NBA teams in their same buildings. And I'm under the impression, and I've only heard this secondhand, that the NBA deal that was signed between the league and the players, those owners feel that the NBA deal is better for the owners. And so I've been told that when some of the details get out, the NHL owners or the ones that have learned about it, they're like, ugh, they got more than we did. But again, I've only heard that secondhand, but it sounds possible to me.
We'll leave it there, Elliot. Have a wonderful weekend. And I guarantee you this time next Friday, I will ask you, where are we at? That will be the first question of the segment. So come ready for bear.
I got to tell you, I'll tell you one thing I've been talking about, Scotty. I would not be surprised if training camp gets really crushed because there's no point in playing exhibition games, too many of them. You can't have fans. And the players are apparently skating and ready, and most of them are in good shape. I think they're going to be small training camps, maybe 35 people, and not as long as we're used to. So I think they will compress those to get started.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting, like, what kind of rules are around Christmas gatherings for players and their families and all that, because you also got to keep the virus out as best you can, right? Because that would complicate matters. We'll chat next week, Elliot. Look forward to it.
All right, take care.
Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night in Canada and the NHL on Sportsnet. Jarrett Bell of USA Today on the Ravens-Steelers situation and on the mess, and that's an understatement, in Dallas, coming up. No word yet from the NFL on whether the Ravens and Steelers will play on Sunday. It is still scheduled, although Baltimore's facility is closed until Monday. And while I wasn't very good at math in school, I can count, and Monday is one day further away than Sunday. So if the facility is closed to Monday, how can the football team go out and play a game on Sunday? And if they don't, when does the NFL make up that Ravens-Steelers game? Some complications. Also, the mess in Dallas. So much to get to with our next guest, Jarrett Bell of USA Today. Jarrett, thanks so much for jumping on this morning. We appreciate your time. What do you think happens? We're hanging in, pal. Like, we got a lot to get to. I can't wait to get into this Cowboys thing, but we got to start with the Ravens and Steelers. Do you think they play on Sunday? And if they don't, which is the direction I'm leaning, does the NFL have to end up creating a Week 18 to get this game in?
Maybe. I mean, there's the contingency that there will be a Week 18, and this would definitely qualify as one that you think could fill that slot. And I think the other complication is that, you know, the Ravens are supposed to play the Cowboys next Thursday. So say if you push the game to Monday and Tuesday. Remember they had that Tuesday night game a few weeks ago with Tennessee. You can't do – if you do that, then you're going to have to do something to the other game, which is the Cowboys and the Ravens on Thursday. So it's – you know, the league, as this season has gone on, has run out of windows to – you know, to flex in some of these things. So that's why now you're talking about Week 18. But, it's crazy because I think the thinking from people that I talked to in the league was that if they thought they got to Friday and everything was contained, that, you know, they go on with Sunday. And so, yeah, everybody's waiting, like you, me, the Ravens players, the Steelers players, you know, everybody's waiting to see kind of what the league's decision is going to be on that. Now, in terms of what you said at the top about the facility being closed until Monday, I almost think that's a bit independent from the idea that they could still conceivably go to Pittsburgh and play the game and come back to the facility on Tuesday. I think that's still very much a part of the possibility, and that's just me. I mean, you got your math. And I respect your math, and it's nothing wrong with your math. It checks off right on paper. But I think in this case, it might be possible that they go to Pittsburgh and play a game and then come back. But I don't know. Because the one thing that's been just, I wouldn't say it's been confusing, but I guess maybe that is the best word, is the protocols that the league has had and how they've adjusted them. And I'll give them credit for being progressive and tweaking things as they learn things along the way. But, it's been pretty crazy how they've had to adjust the protocols almost on a weekly basis with different things. And so one of them being that everybody is in intensive protocol and all the players on the sideline, which I saw a lot yesterday in watching the games, where people did not have face masks on the sideline. But all of these different things that they've put in, it's been just a lot to digest.
With Jarrett Bell. And Jarrett, we're going to try to call you back. We just got a lot of static on that cell phone line, so we've made the executive decision to hang up and reconnect with Jarrett. And I think one of the questions I want to ask, Siggy, is, okay, so the 49ers and Packers went ahead. What's the difference? And is it really the Lamar situation?
Well, how about Tennessee Titans? Weren't they out of their practice facility for the week? And then they had to play even longer than
right,
a week.
But this was all pre-bye, right? So you had the ability earlier in the season to adjust games. There's a Tennessee tree. Like, the Steelers were affected, the Bills mm-hmm. and Kansas City were affected. Like, a lot of teams ended up affected. But now that the bye weeks have been through, you don't have as much wiggle room. Jarrett, does it come down to bye weeks in terms of rescheduling this thing as well? Because Ziggy and I were just talking as we reconnected with you. Like, the San Francisco 49ers had a positive test with Kendrick Bourne, and a bunch of players in Bourne's inner circle, guys who'd been close to him, were not allowed to play that Thursday nighter against Green Bay. League jammed that game in. Like, why, with enhanced practice rosters and such, I know it would put Baltimore at a huge disadvantage, but why would the NFL not to try? Why would the NFL not try to jam Sunday's game in?
No, they're going to try to jam it in. You could believe that. Or they would have called it off already, I think. And, you know, when I talk to people in league circles, that's what I get back is that, you know, we've done these things in terms of, you know, the roster enhancements, for lack of a better word, where they, you know, increased the practice squads. They've taken some of the restrictions down from how you can put, you know, bring guys up and back. You put veterans on practice squads if you want. IR rules are different. So they've done a lot of things just to kind of, you know, ensure a lot more flexibility with the roster than they've had before. Whether that's the answer, ultimately, it's kind of what they're sticking with. You know, the NFL has always been this next man up environment, right? And so I think that's what they've kind of hung on to, which might explain why that 49ers-Packers game was played. But, yeah, you're right. There's less wiggle room now. You still have week 18, and you still have about a quarter, a little bit more than a quarter of the season remaining. After Sunday, I think it'll be like 30% of the games still left to be played in the regular season. And remember, that was their thing. It's like, we're going to have a full, complete regular season. Well, we'll see. This stretch run is going to be pretty crazy when you start factoring in the possibility of more cases like Baltimore. And you know, I went and looked at every team in the league a couple nights ago just to see how many guys were on COVID. And that was before, like, Larry Fitzgerald and Lamar Jackson and some others tested and wound up on the list. And you mentioned San Francisco. They still have, like, six or seven guys on the list right now. And you look at Jacksonville, and they've got, like, the defensive coaching staff, you know, really ravaged by it. So these things are going to continue to pop up just because we see that they have, and we see what's going on in terms of across the nation. So, yeah, the league is really going to be challenged to figure out where and how it can get these games in. And I think the other thing to think about, too, you know, we talk about week 18, which is a real possibility, but there's no law that says they can't push the Super Bowl back another couple of weeks if they want to. So I think they're thinking they've really tried to stick to the schedule. The Super Bowl is going to be on February 7th, and then you work back from that in terms of the playoff rounds and all of that. And so I'll give them that. They don't want to, you know, start fooling with the Super Bowl date yet, but it's either going to be that, or you say it's going to be a 14-game season. And I think the more likely scenario is that it may be a 16-game season for one team and a 14-game season for another team and a 15-game season for another team. And then when you start talking about playoff slots, it'll be based on winning percentage as opposed to, you know, the normal you know, victories when everybody's got an equal number of games.
So then they'll move to 8 playoff teams. What do you think the appetite is for the league for that? Or do they want to avoid that at all costs?
I think it's interesting. I think, you know, if they get more playoff games and you do that, then you cut off a bunch of teams that are eliminated, right? And I think that so it would be 16, really. It would be 16 altogether, which is, you know, like half the league. So I think that is a possibility as well. I remember, because I've been doing this thing long enough, I remember 1982. And in 1982, there was a strike early in the season that lasted for half the season, for 9 weeks. And when they came back from that, they had a playoff tournament, which they had, you know, a large number of playoff teams. I don't remember off the top of my head. I guess I need to go back and see exactly how many they had in 82, but it was an extra round or two, and it was an extra four teams, for lack of a better, for the sake of argument, it was a bunch more teams. And they had a tournament, and it went off, and they went on and had their Super Bowl. So I can see that scenario really coming into play again here, as has been talked about
you know, throughout this whole thing, most recently around midseason when the competition committee had its midseason meetings.
Jarrett Bell of USA Today is with us. This is leadoff Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Not that this would ever happen, Jarrett, but if you, Ziggy, or I ever got invited to Jerry Jones's place and slept in the guest bedroom overnight one night, would we stand the possibility of being hired as his team's next head coach?
You have to wonder what the process is, right?
I know that a lot of Cowboys, almost all Cowboys conversations, Jarrett, get back to Jerry Jones, and you can't fire the owner, and especially an owner who fancies himself the general manager. But is Jerry Jones equipped to properly deal with the catastrophic mess that he himself has perpetuated through the years? That seems to be culminating in complete disaster now.
Yeah, it's really a trip, for lack of a better word, because you look at it a couple of different ways. You see how long he really stuck with Jason Garrett, and you know people were calling for Jason to be bounced, you know, for 3, 4, 5 years before it actually happened. And I don't know if he'll have that. I'm almost sure he won't have that type of patience with Mike McCarthy. And then even with McCarthy, you got to talk about the special teams coordinator, John Fossil, and the defensive coordinator, Mike Nolan, the whole deal. Okay, so that's one side of it. Then you talk about the GM side of it. And I think he has felt for, and we've talked about it multiple times over the years, I think he feels like, and he, you know, you say fancy himself as GM, he'd be insulted by that because he actually does serve in that GM capacity. But he's flanked by a guy named Will McClay, who's he's a vice president, and pardon me for not knowing the exact title, but Will McClay is kind of like the guy behind the curtains when it comes to the draft, because if you look at the players that they've brought in there through drafts and even some of their free agent moves, I mean, they've made solid personnel moves. I mean, it's a constant thing. You always have to kind of adjust depending on who retires and who gets hurt and who leaves as a free agent and all of that. So that's a constant thing for every team in the league. And they feel like, and I think that they have done a decent job of getting the talent there. And he's also flanked by Stephen Jones, his son, who's on the personnel side. So between Jerry, Stephen, and Will McClay, I think they feel like the personnel side is okay. That's what they think. Now, you can always argue that, you know, some teams, you know, need a GM and to have the power, and that's where it falls. So that does happen in Dallas. But, I mean, what do you want? Do you want Bob Quinn, the Lions general manager, who comes in and you talk about coaching process? You know, you bring your buddy in from New England and it's a disaster there. So that may not just be the automatic answer. I mean, if you look around the league, and, yeah, there are some teams that have some really good GMs, and Chris Ballard with the Colts comes to mind, and you see how they've been able to build it back up in these past couple, 3 years, especially even with Andrew Luck, you know, being a sudden retirement. So there is some value in that, but it has to be the right person to be able to do it. So I think they feel like, you know, Will McClay running their draft, it could be their equivalent to a Chris Ballard. So, then you get to the coaching. And I think that's where the shoe is going to drop, and we'll see how much patience he has, because it's pretty rare for him to make that move after just 1 year. But you saw what you saw yesterday, and it was atrocious. And that game management with that fake punt at that point in the game, at that position on the field, with the game being as tight as it was, I mean, you know, why do you do it? So,
well,
yeah, it cost them.
I can tell you this, Jarrett, and or the good listener who tolerates me every morning knows I'm a 49ers fan because I don't shut up about them. But if you want to have Mike Nolan and Jim Tom Sula on your coaching staff, have at it, pal. Enjoy that, Mr. Jones. You know, like, I mean, it's just it's a good example. I think McCarthy has got to go, and I'm sure that'll happen at the end of the year. You can't be losing divisional games with playoff implications by 25 points against a pretty bad Washington team and survive. We're right out of time, unfortunately. Love having you on, and we certainly will reach out in December, Jarrett. Thank you for this, and continue to enjoy your Thanksgiving weekend.
Okay, have a good one, man. Peace.
Jarrett Bell of USA Today, NFL columnist. We'll get Hugh into studio, get you set for the weekend coming up. Front page of the Globe and Mail is the big news this morning. The possibility that a brand new stadium for the Toronto Blue Jays will be built on the land currently occupied by Rogers Center. So that leads to a lot of questions. If they're going to raise one place, where the Blue Jays going to play in the interim? And I know we're getting a lot of text to 590-590. Well, now's a good time to do it. If the Jays have to play in Buffalo in 2021 during COVID, well, hold on a second. There's a long process before shovels are even in the ground.
Oh, yeah. This is years away.
And
still,
you don't build a stadium of that magnitude in 9 months once shovels are in the ground.
No.
You know, the construction of Skydome was a 2.5-year process at least, if memory serves.
And that seems pretty quick, too. So this is a few years away, but it is good news. It's a step in the right direction, and fans should be excited about this.
Yeah, I'd like them to build something. You know, I was talking about Cherry Beach. I did message a friend. That land's all been, it's pre-developed. So that's not an option down, you know, towards, what's that nightclub there called? The Pier
Rebel,
or whatever.
Rebel. But that's a good point, Ziggy. I drive the Gardner there, and you can see it from the rise of the Gardner. There are bulldozers everywhere.
Yeah.
And that is a massive patch under construction.
Yeah, even the buildings that are there, it's all being developed. So that's not possible.
Well, but,
you know, I'm sure it's I'd like to see something like you mentioned Pittsburgh. That would be pretty sweet.
Well, but you gotta put a roof on it. You gotta put a roof on it. And maybe you create an open air feel where it's glassed in so you get a lot of natural light. Milwaukee has done that very nicely. Seattle actually plays in the open air, even with a roof. I don't know if we want that in April with the cold winds coming off the lake, but there are a lot of really neat things they could do, and we'll look forward to it. We'll certainly be tracking this story. Have a wonderful weekend. Lock in those Ziggy Locks. We're back at 6 o'clock on Monday morning. Good show is next.
If you weren't